Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
This is Chinook Patterns. I'm Paula Schiller. When it comes to rural education in Alaska, methods that work fine in Peoria, Illinois, may not be very effective in Anaktuvik Pass. At least that's what the researchers in cross-cultural education are saying. Teachers going to rural areas need to be better informed about the communities they'll be living in. Steve Grubas, an associate professor at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks, is coordinator of a year-long cross-cultural orientation program. It's designed to provide pre-service and in-service training to rural educators to prepare them for the bush and give them the support they need to be comfortable in the villages and effective in the classrooms.
One of the major problems in rural education is a high teacher turnover rate. Rural districts, the average for REAAs, rural education attendance areas, and teacher turnover is about 40%. Some districts have run as high as 78%, which means then that the type of curriculum continuity and staff continuity isn't really there. And many of these small high schools also run a very high percentage turnover. Some run 100% turnover. And all of this exacerbates the problems of rural education. Now, this program is intended to orient people to some of the realities that exist in rural settings, different cultural styles of learning, what really constitutes a rural community, and what's going on in rural Alaska, the importance of the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement for education, and what a corporation really is, and just to sort of prepare educators for the kinds of realities that exist on site, and not just realities in the classroom, but realities beyond the classroom, situations beyond the classroom. It appears that many teachers have problems, not in the classroom, but in dealing with the community and dealing with the isolation. And it's really not isolation. Rural communities, probably villages, there's probably more social contact in villages than there are in urban areas for people walking into these communities to teach. But one is isolated from one's own support systems. And this can be somewhat disruptive to people. One of the things that always amazes outside people, teachers coming in, is the technology that exists here, which doesn't appear to be in use as frequently as it is up here, like teleconferencing and computer terminals. And so we try to orient people to the use of that kind of stuff, as well as the types of curriculum materials that seem to make sense, and also teacher methodology. Mm-hmm. Some of the traditional ways of organizing classrooms and dealing with students in classrooms really works across purposes and in different cultural settings. It isn't the most effective way to do things. So we try to expose people to master teachers, native and non-native teachers, who have a longevity record in rural settings and who are recognized as effective educators. And we provide lots of opportunities for people to exchange ideas in informal settings.
Why a year?
The reason for the year is most in-service education, first of all, tends to be a very short duration. You don't bring about changes through 1 week workshops, 2 week or 3 week workshops. From the research, it appears that in-service education over a period of time, providing people with conceptual tools, the tools to be able to solve problems on site, instead of telling people this is the way things are, you provide the kinds of tools where people can solve their own problems. And in order to do this adequately for a classroom teacher, it's necessary to work with that person over a period of time so that we have 3 weeks in the summer in which we begin to provide people with the information that's necessary, the latest research, the kinds of realities they'll be stepping into, the types of interactional skills that seem so necessary in rural Alaska. Then, as the year progresses, there are some very fairly predictable syndromes, very predictable patterns of behavior for new teachers coming into the state.
Can you give me a for instance on that?
Well, there's culture shock. What tends to happen is that when one is in a different cultural setting where maybe people wear the same clothing, maybe there's people look different than you do, mm-hmm. But the way the world is organized, the way people deal with problems, the way meetings are conducted, is quite different. And after a period of time, there's always a fascination with the new. Mm-hmm. When the world is organized in a manner in which we aren't used to, it becomes somewhat irritating. And then one begins to dislike everything about it. And that, you know, culture shock is something many people experience in different kinds of settings. And that's something that teachers tend to experience. And then teachers often tend to relate to one another more so than the community they're in. You tend to deal with your own group. Mm-hmm. And it appears that the most effective educators are the ones that have community rapport, understand the complexities of the communities they're operating in, and also pick up on communicative styles. In other words, how things are done in the community. Different groups have different pacings. For mm-hmm. example, the average response time for an Anglo child in the States sitting in a classroom responding to a question is about a half a second to a second. Among different ethnic groups, that response time varies quite a bit. If you aren't aware of that, you're going to have all kinds of cross-cultural miscommunication problems.
Right. You're going to think that silence is unresponsiveness or stupidity or something like that when it's just mm-hmm. really a normal response time for that community.
That's right. And also group meetings, for example, if you have four or five people sitting around a table, Anglos sitting around a table in a group discussion cannot tolerate more than 5 seconds of silence. Then they start speaking. Mm-hmm. You change the ethnic composition of the group and you'll have different time spans where silence is quite acceptable. You mix in, let's say, a teacher with a native school board, and if a teacher's not used to the patterns of communication, then the teacher tends to talk all the time, tends to dominate a situation without really realizing that there's community input that could be obtained mm-hmm. if one was aware of how to obtain it. And I think it really behooves educators to tune in to the community they're functioning in, no matter if it's in Peoria or Allakaket or Aleknagik or wherever. It doesn't mm-hmm. really matter. One has to be sensitive to the community rhythms and what happens in that community to become an effective educator in the classroom.
So am I right in thinking that the first part of the program alerts the new teachers to these kinds of things, and then maybe is the next session more specific to things they've already encountered?
Okay, well, the first 3 weeks provides them with a general orientation to the state.
Uh-huh.
Just, you know, why, for example, there are why is there a small high school with only 10 students in my mm-hmm. community? You know, the reasons for that, the history of Native education in the state, and also an orientation on the general flora and fauna. In other words, how does one incorporate the immediate environment into the classroom? The second phase, of course, this is really a 9-credit mm-hmm. program, begins in the fall on site, and the participants will be involved in that course via audio cassettes and teleconferencing and computer terminals where appropriate, mm-hmm. and also faculty visits on site. There'll also be a meeting in January in which the whole group is convened again.
Mm-hmm.
And besides the information and the conceptual stuff mm-hmm. that's crucial for effectiveness in rural Alaska, another factor that seems to assist in longevity rural educators is a group identity, a group ethos. From past programs and past research, it appears that if a cluster of folks can have a group identity, and if one realizes that I may be an Anituvik Pass and I have a friend in the village of Manakotik who is perhaps experiencing the same kinds of problems I am, and we can correspond or perhaps even telephone today,
mm-hmm.
that group identity seems to be a factor in longevity. That coupled with an understanding of the complexities of the issues that are going on. Because one of the things I think that happens is people come in, they see a community, a small village, and they simply view it as a simple society, where it's extremely complex, you know, evolved over thousands of years, and really has probably maintained, many of these communities have been, clusters of folks have been maintaining a style and relationship to the environment for thousands and thousands of years and have their own form of education, an informal form of education. And Western education is really somewhat new.
Have you found that in working with the new teachers that there are some standard misconceptions or some things that just always you can just count on that they come in with that that you know right away that you have to educate or take care of or somehow?
There's, I think there's a lot of misconceptions when people come in from outside. Mm-hmm. I think the best way to distill, to remove those misconceptions is you mix in your new, of course, many of the people coming up have had extensive teaching experience. Some have taught 20 and 30. We had one couple in the last session who taught for 33 years. And many people come in with misconceptions about the state to begin with, and especially about, you know, villages and about native communities. I think a lot of the myths about the state tend to evaporate in the course of the program, especially when they're on campus here. We do get them out into the field. We'll be spending the 1 week at an outdoor school site. We'll be with some, there'll be some master native teachers at that setting, and we'll be in tents. And we'll be dealing with looking at the immediate environment and how to incorporate that into your classroom setting. Besides understanding the flora and fauna, there are social and political implications with the fish, let's say salmon, for example. Besides being able to use the salmon as a source of biology in a classroom or a source for all kinds of curriculum to develop. There are some very powerful political and social implications, subsistence issues, economic issues that revolve around that fish. So we'll be dealing with those issues as well as curriculum materials, learning styles.
What about the idea that I've been hearing coming from villages and some of the rural school boards and things that the teachers are too involved. The teachers should teach and leave the culture, leave the spiritual stuff, the particularly native curriculum to the parents and to the local teachers or to the native teachers that might happen to be there, that it's really something that an outside teacher shouldn't mess with.
Well, you can't expect an outside teacher to teach culture, teach language. However, what does happen is outside teachers right away are cast into the role of teaching land claim settlement, and they have no idea what that is. A tremendous amount of misconceptions about the Alaska Land Claim Settlement Act. One of the things that we try to do through the program is to make people aware of the kinds of resources that can be brought in, bring the kids out to those resources. And really, we don't encourage teachers to become involved in village politics whatsoever. You keep away from that. What we do encourage is teachers to understand the community they're in, to relate to the community, and to use the resources of the community. But they really, you can't expect outside educators to teach the culture of the community. It can't be done. But they can facilitate certain sorts of things, and can be aware of some of the problems that exist. For example, language problems, where students are speaking or operating in a second language. If a teacher is aware of that, or just communicative styles in some places, a raising of the eyebrows communicates a positive response to a question. If an educator isn't aware of that, you can have tremendous, difficulties in a classroom.
You won't know what you're listening to or watching.
That's right. Oh, there's a response coming back, and you won't be aware of that.
Steve Grubas is the coordinator of the Cross-Cultural Orientation Program for Rural Alaskan Educators. It's a 9-credit, year-long course. I'm Paula Schiller, and this has been a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.